Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. This isn't just about money. This is about life. And now the host of the Power of the Purse podcast, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life not too long ago when I believed three things about money. One, women are not supposed to talk about or be included in any conversations about money. Two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise. And it was something I could not only understand, but teach to other women. Too many times I've heard stories from women who ought to know better, but didn't until they were forced to because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. This podcast will add another chapter to a rich history of successful women who, when faced with some personal challenges, found the ability to step beyond them. We'll examine some of the truths they made up about money from their life experiences and how that shaped the paths they chose. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Isabel Weyrich. Isabel is currently the vice president of Mars International in Piscataway, New Jersey. She's been there for quite some time, started off doing things like assistant controller, president, all those things that eventually got her to the point where she is the vice president. She graduated from Uppsala College in New Jersey. She started at Baldwin Wallace University in Ohio, where she met her husband, and they moved to New Jersey, where she finished her college degree after 10 years at night while working full time. So this is good. This is wonderful stuff. Welcome, Isabel.
Glad to be here, Lynn.
Okay, let's just jump in and do all the kind of fun things we talked about.
Okay.
I'm fascinated to know why it is that a woman who was probably, I would say, of age in the late 50s, decided against all that was normally prescribed by society to go to college. You must have been one of a handful of women in your class.
Well, it was always expected by my parents, who were not educated very well. And I grew up in Scotland. I was an only child, very modest circumstances. But my parents, only my father worked, my mother did not, actually scraped money together to send me to what was known in Scotland as a public school, would be a private school here, so I would get a very good education. And it was always their dream that I would continue to be educated. I think they wanted me to become a school teacher. I think that's what they had in mind. But education was always important, more important than money.
Okay, so you got education, but when did you come to this country? How old were you when you came here?
15 when we came to this country, and besides education, the other thing my parents were always concerned about was working, because that was how you got money. So before I even went to high school, they found me a job, part-time job, which I had in Cleveland, Ohio, and I've always worked.
What did you do?
Oh, that job, I was actually hired by the Sherwin-Williams Paint Company in the flats of Cleveland to do summer filing in their attic. And if you can imagine what that was like, it was hot and dusty, but I was careful.
Wow.
So I did a good job at it, and they let me do the mail as well. So I learned how to operate the Pitney Bowes machine or whatever it was. But the only bad part about that was that happened after everybody left. So I was the last one to leave, and I had to cross these flats, which were not gentrified at that time. There was a lot of homeless people and strange people there, and I had to go to the streetcar to get home. I learned to walk very fast. But it was also motivated to get a better job closer to where I lived.
And did you?
Well, when I went to school, I think we came in April or something like that, and by September I was started high school. So there was a guidance counselor, so they found me the next job, which I didn't like either. It was shrink-wrapping meat in a supermarket. So
my goodness.
Went back and asked them, could they find me something better? And they did. Actually, my job after that was working for, they had a woman that nobody else could work with, apparently. She was the accountant for the local YMCA, and she had trouble with all of the help they sent her. But she liked me, and I worked hard, and she taught me double-entry bookkeeping. So that was one, and I found I liked it.
Wow.
So that was a good job.
That's amazing that not only did you have a job with somebody that nobody else really wanted to work with, but you actually learned some very important business skills. And it was in math, which was one of those things that women weren't supposed to do. I love it.
I knew I always did okay in math, but I never really, till I did that job, really understand that how much I enjoyed the, once I figured out the bookkeeping part, then I tried to figure out what the numbers all meant. And that was something I really liked.
Great. Boy, what a lucky thing that was. That's pretty nice. Are you telling me that it was your guidance counselors who got you the job?
Yes. They.
Wow, they don't do that anymore. I don't recall a guidance counselor, telling me we have some job openings for you and stuff. This was all something I had to do by myself with connections my parents had. But I have never known a guidance counselor to take that kind of a role. That's pretty amazing.
My parents had no connections, and I was fresh off the boat, as they say, with a very thick accent. I would have no clue about finding a job myself, but the school did provide, they had some kind of arrangements to find part-time jobs for kids, I guess.
And how long did it take before the Scottish accent kind of disappeared?
3 weeks, according to my mother. like most kids, I didn't want to sound different. And she was very, so I tried. But there's still some words when you say foot or boot and there's two O's in there. I kind of clip them off the way that you would. So I still do it. And then later in life, when I went to visit my parents and I'd come back after just a week, my husband would say, "Oh, you came back with that Scottish accent again." So it goes around.
I have a college friend who right after we graduated, I think it was within the year after we graduated, she married a man from Scotland and moved there. And she's been there, I would say, all of her adult life. And it's funny that when she has family here, and actually she comes to visit her brother, who has a place in New Jersey, when she comes usually every year. And when we get together with her, it's a very pronounced accent to us. And she tells me that everybody in Scotland thinks she talks like an American. So I guess you do it all. I don't know, but that's so funny. You did it intentionally. Yeah. Well, obviously. When you're a kid, that's so important to you, to be like everybody else.
Right.
Okay, so tell me about this passion you have for photography. When did it start?
Oh, well, as the years went by, my husband and I traditionally would take vacations between Christmas and New Year's, because that seemed to be the good time to be away. And since we had no children, we didn't have much family, we traveled then. And on one trip, I think it was back in the early 1980s, we went to Antarctica. They were just starting to open up Antarctica for travel, and we got on an early cruise there. And I had bought a point-and-shoot camera in Hong Kong the week before. I was there in business, and I picked up one and 12 rolls of film, which I thought was outrageous, and read the directions on the journey, and tried to figure out this camera. But the scenery and the wildlife were so spectacular. I came back with some photographs that were decent, and a friend of mine who was a much better photographer said, if you had better equipment and put a little effort into this, you could do something with this, and I really enjoyed it. So I did. So yeah. That's how I got started, with a trip to Antarctica and a camera I had bought the week before in Hong Kong. So it all worked out.
And why did you focus on wildlife as opposed to people?
I don't know
mountains.
The answer to that. It seems to me that I have a lot of photographer friends now, and everybody seems to just go and wonder. Somebody likes to do portraits. Someone else likes to do landscapes or scenery. I just love wildlife. And my husband was probably part of that. He grew up in Pines Lake, New Jersey, on a beautiful mm-hmm. lake, and he had a great appreciation for birds and wildlife, more than I had. And I think I kind of learned it from him. And found that that was where my passion lay.
And then you started, you actually took someone's advice on that and decided to start selling your photographs. So
yeah.
Were you commissioned by anybody to do some work for them, specifically with some particular animal?
Not really. For a while, I did have an agent, believe it or not, someone I ran
mm-hmm.
into, and she had some work of mine placed in galleries and things like that, not a great deal. But I was always very busy, too. So I ended up really mostly giving my work away, and I found out later in life it's a wonderful way to do philanthropic giving also. Everybody's got silent auctions or things
yeah.
where they're trying to do fundraising. So I contributed a lot of my art to fundraising, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the feedback I get for something speaks to someone in a certain way, it makes my day.
Well, I can say that I'm staring at one of your pieces of work as we're sitting here because we have a mutual friend, actually Jack and Judy Killian,
yeah.
and Jack has asked you, I guess, to take some photos of American eagles.
And I'm
looking at one here that is I think it's the logo for the Eagle Rock Diversified Fund that Jack was a part of for years.
You're right. I'd forgotten about that.
Yes. And I'm sitting here looking at a picture of it, and it's incredible. It is just, a beautiful photo of a great animal, a bird.
Would you like a 30-second story about that?
Yes. Go right ahead.
I'm up in Alaska photographing with a well-known bird photographer, Art Morris, and he kind of took me under his wing and helped me a lot.
No pun intended.
Right, exactly. How clever. So we were up there, and it turned out, I had talked to him before I went on the trip. It was, you could go 1 week or another week, and I said, Art, which week should I go on? Now, this is in February or March in Alaska. He said, Isabel, what do you want me to tell you? He said, if you really want to be sure you've got the most days out in the field, go for both weeks. So I did. I packed up everything, including a lot of books, because I expected to be in the hotel reading a lot, and I had two glorious weeks of photographing eagles every day. Sometimes it snowed, but we were still photographing. However, I had in mind this mission that Jack had given me. His company was Eagle Rock, you're right, and he wanted a photograph of an eagle on a rock. Well, I had eagles on snow, I had eagles in the river, I had eagles on branches, I had eagles everywhere you can think of except on a rock. So finally, it's getting close to the end of the 2 weeks, and I said, Art, I said, I really have to get a picture of an eagle on a rock. So we drove around, and he saw a nice-looking rock, and he took a fish, and he put it behind the rock, and I perched myself in front of the rock, but there's not an eagle in sight. 5 minutes later, we are being bombarded with eagles diving for that fish. So that's how I got a picture of eagle on a rock.
That was really smart.
It was fun.
Yeah. So tell me about your website. You have a lot of photos there.
Yes, when I would go on a trip, and I actually ended up going back to Antarctica, I think four times. I did the chinstrap penguin one, you know, up there where you have to be helicoptered in and walk for a mile to reach the penguins. So I developed different galleries for penguins, birds, even my garden at home, because I like photographing local things too, frogs, you know, anything that happens to butterflies. So I've just developed categories of things that I enjoy photographing, and they're laid out on my website, isabelsimages.com.
Yeah, that's a plural. Isabel's, I'm sorry, it's possessive without the apostrophe. Isabelsimages.com.
But that's been, that's been fun.
Can people buy those images?
I don't really sell them anymore, to tell you the truth, because I don't want to get involved with sales tax and things like that. But
yeah,
if they have a worthy cause and they approach me, I will certainly make sure it's taken care of.
Great. Okay, that sounds really wonderful. I love the fact that you have a passion for something which you've allowed to manifest, you know, in the sense that it's not just sounds like a good idea, maybe someday I'll do it. The fact that you actually bought the crazy camera and 12 rolls of film was an intention to try to do this. And then you actually found a master at it, which really helped you to do something even more high quality than what you were originally playing around with. So, you know, I think the message here is that for a lot of women who are looking at, I don't even know if transitions in their lives, but just feeling a need for self-expression, I guess is the word. And some people paint, and you know, there's a lot of, it's a new trend now where everybody goes to these places where they give you the easels and the paint. You're supposed to paint something that's up there as the object. And I think the real kicker is that they also, either you bring the wine or they serve wine. So a lot of women are saying, oh, this is fun. I'm going to go. And they call them all these cute little names, you know, wine and something or whatever, grapes and something. But it's fun, but I don't think there's any seriousness in it, except that you're trying to almost, it's like a paint by numbers thing. So there's no great creativity in doing that, but it's just a fun exercise to do something different. But there are a lot of women who love to do other things like that as a way of self-expression, like knitting, sewing, even cake, decorating. There's so many different things that one can do that it's not necessarily aligned with what is considered to be feminine expression. Many women, as we're now seeing, because we're doing this during the time of the Olympics, we're watching young women really get engaged in a lot of outdoor sports, some very competitive, grinding sports. So I think that I commend you for the fact that you took something that was very different from the type of work that you've been doing, which is not, I'm not saying it has no value at all. I don't mean it that way, but the kind of work you're doing with accounting and math and projections and strategies in a business, that is very, I don't know which brain side it is. I never could understand left or right brain, but it's one of those. And then the photography is the other side of the brain. And it's just great to see that you're creating a whole human being out of that. And I just think that most people do not think of themselves as having the capacity to do anything other than what they're doing in their career. And maybe they're, you know, wonderful parents and caregivers and whatever that is, the roles that we play. But that need for self-expression is what's missing in so many people's lives. And I think women more than men, only because women find it hard with all the other roles that we have in life to find the time to do that. So I don't know that you have any great words of wisdom, but I think that's an important thing that you did. You made a decision to do something that was fun, just for the heck of it. It had no
fun. Maybe it's part of my personality too. Even though it was fun, I wanted to do it as well as I could. So I did work at that too. I worked it when it turned time to go from that nice print film to digital. I went kicking and screaming all the way, but I had to do it, and I had to learn Photoshop, and I had to learn how to process photographs. not the part I enjoy. I enjoy taking the photographs, but it's part of it, you know. So again, yeah, you have to work at it. And I learned, and I took some workshops with people that were better than I was, so they could help me. And you know, so it just makes you better at your at whatever you're doing.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you dove in, you know, and never just quit. It's truly a learning process, and there's always more to learn. Like you said, you know, you're kicking and screaming into the digital age. I think so many baby boomer women have the same problems. But those of us, you know, who want to go someplace, you got to learn how to do it or you're left behind.
Right.
So that's great. I love that story about your life. And I just, I see the stuff that you do. And that's the other fun thing is that what you're doing has a physical result. You can show people that you've done something. And I certainly love that picture of that.
Thank you.
Eagle sitting on a rock.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I really am. I love it. So let me flip this.
I have art all, I have photographs all, this is a 60,000 square foot building I'm sitting in. There are photographs on every wall from every trip I ever took. Yeah, really? Well, you need a place to put this stuff, and I've got the perfect venue for it here.
Exactly. That's good. So that's a question I was just going to ask you. What does Mars International do?
Well, we're involved in design engineering for projects for other companies, mostly OEM, and we do all the design and development of the project here. And then we handle the contract manufacturing for the customer. Today it's in the Far East. Over the years, that's changed the locations, but now it's all in the Far East. So that's what I do.
Did you do a lot of the traveling to those places?
I did. At one time, I was traveling all the time, and my husband was very good about that because I would be gone a lot. Starting out in Europe and then progressing over the years to, you know, Japan and Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, China. But I enjoyed that too. I never took really time to photograph any of these places, believe it or not,
because
I was there. I was there for business, and by the time business was done, I was also anxious to get home. So that's how it worked. But I enjoyed meeting people from around the world and learning about other cultures. So it's been when I was traveling, I really enjoyed it. But now today with the traveling hassles of security and airports and stuff, I leave that to the younger guys.
Okay. That sounds good. Let me switch this around, ask you a question about your experience with money when you were young. So obviously, there was a difference there between what you had to learn as an adult and what your parents had to learn, only because you had very different amounts of money to work with. So how did you learn? Well, let me ask you this, I guess a better way to say it. What did you learn from your parents about money? What did they teach you?
Well, they actually didn't teach me much because this was 80 years ago in Scotland, and it was the children are seen and not heard era, and money was never discussed. But what became apparent later, as I wanted to go to college and stuff, I was going, the expectation was that I had to earn money. So that's how I learned. I learned that I needed money to pay for college and to buy some clothes and things like that. Once my parents got me to that point, and then it was up to me.
Did your parents ever expect that you would support them in any way?
No, but I wanted to. And as a matter of fact, when we talk about what happened later in life, for many years I worked for companies. And at one point I got a bit concerned about my parents because they were aging and I knew they had no money and I was concerned about supporting them. So actually that was one of the biggest motivators for going into my own business because, you know, you make a nice salary working for people, but you don't really make a lot of money. And I had a problem at that point. I wanted to be sure I could take care of them. As it ended up, I really ended up not giving them very much money at all because, first of all, they didn't want to take it. And but that was the motivating factor for me, was I wanted to be sure I could take care of them if I had to.
And I think one of the things that you mentioned in the paperwork that you sent to me before we actually got on the air was that the one thing that you are most proud of is creating financial independence for yourself.
Yeah.
And that is an amazing thing for a woman in your generation to say something like that, because it was never something that a woman would even aspire to. So been, where did that come from?
Well, it came from, I say, at one point from needing to make money and then realizing that I could make money and that I was good at some things, and the satisfaction one gets of saying, yeah, you've done this and you've bought this house and paid for it and you've got this portfolio that you put together. And it's pretty, my husband contributed, but he was not a huge money. He was involved in teaching and education. So, I was just motivated to want to be independent. And I also wanted to be sure as I aged that I'd be able to take care of myself.
Smart move. Did you have any mentors?
Actually, everybody who was my boss at one point or other, I considered a mentor rather than one person. Mm-hmm. Although I learned a lot about marketing and sales, which is not my forte, from one particular company I worked with, where the owner of the company had developed a product that had became globally very popular. So he taught me a lot about marketing and sales, so it was a mentor in that way, and was not something that I was, my cup of tea as opposed to the numbers. But I learned a lot from him. And when I did start my own company, ultimately, I needed a business partner, because I had a lot of expertise in that at that point in a certain area. Basically, it was the plastics industry, but I needed someone who had electronics, because all these projects require both plastics and electronics. So my business partner was someone I knew, and we both respected each other a lot. We got together, and he's been a great mentor. He really has been. He's still my
That's
business
great.
Partner. Yeah.
So from that, you started your own business, which, again, was something completely unheard of. How did you get business? I mean, didn't people just turn their noses up and say, oh, I'm not doing business with her, she's a woman?
No, I had a plan, and I was actually working for a company as their controller, VP of finance, I think, actually. And this was back in the 70s, I want to say, where computer-aided engineering was becoming very popular, and opposed to draftsmen and tables and all that stuff. And I thought this looked like a wonderful opportunity, and the company didn't want to do it. But they recognized they probably needed to evolve into that area, as also, as another aside, they were very involved with tools, and tools were becoming made around the world as opposed just in the U.S. So I took those two things, put them together, made them a business plan, and said, I'll take care of all of your needs. You won't have to do it. You'll pay me X, but I'll have that part of your business. So that ended up being at least 50% of the business that I needed to get started was kind of in place before I took off and did it.
Wow. That's
and
a nice story.
Yeah, it was a nice story. And I kept that relationship for many, many years until eventually the company did close. They didn't go out of business, but it was family-owned, and it was time to sell. And by that time, most of the work had gone overseas anyhow, as that handwriting was on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of that, what would you say has been the most threatening to your financial security?
Most threatening?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, starting a business. The one, to me, the most threatening thing always, because it wasn't my forte, was sales. Will I get enough sales? Enough sales? And many times over the years, I've looked at business plans from other young people and stuff like that, and I always ask the same question. I know you can make it. I know you can provide this service or whatever it is, but do you really have the sales? So sales was always the biggest threat. I mean, at one point, cash flow certainly wasn't great in the early days, but I was comfortable with that. I knew how to watch it and monitor it. Sales was something that was a little bit outside of my control. So, yeah, that was the biggest threat, I would say.
Okay. Anything else that you'd like to share with us before we wrap this up today?
I would just like to, I've always been a planner, and I think planning, you hear a lot about strategic plans, and strategic plans are nice, but even if it's not all that strategic, you, at least you have to have a plan, and you have to work the plan, and don't kid yourself. You know, if you need to, we've all been there, done that, right?
Yes. You're speaking to the choir. Yeah, you're singing to the choir, I think, is the expression. Yeah, I mean, that's what I do, is the planning. So,
I enjoy it, actually. To me, it's exciting to have a plan and then see it come to fruition. It may not exactly happen the way you had it planned, but you push and you pull and you make it work.
Yes, exactly. It's the stick-to-itiveness that really matters.
Well, that too.
Okay.
Relationships. It's all about relationships. That's the other piece of advice. Pick good partners in life and in business and customers if you have the opportunity, and really treasure those relationships.
That's good advice, and I do treasure them.
Yeah.
It's really good. Okay, so thanks to my guest today, Isabel Weyrich, and to all of you in my Power of the Purse community. I hope today's podcast was helpful in your understanding of money and how it can help you achieve your goals. If you'd like to spend 15 minutes on a call with me and ask me questions about your personal finances, please go to my website, powerofthepursepodcast.com, select the contact tab, and find a time that works for you. Thanks again, Isabel, for sharing your time and your knowledge. If anyone would like to reach Isabel, you can find her on her website, Isabel's Images, ISOBELSIMAGES.com. And until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Goodbye till the next time.
Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.